Christian Arkey and Andy Hart, WEEI Afternoons, here with you until a little after 6 o'clock. Then we'll hand things over to Joe Weil tonight. Joe Weil with the Mass Mutual pregame show. Joe Weil, who did not jinx the offense yesterday, which is nice.
I already thanked him.
Jinx could be wearing off.
Other studio, I thanked him for not screwing us, although I didn't notice it the first time listening to Tyler O'Neill ride that through October.
Yeah.
Got bad news for you, Tyler.
Very helpful, young man.
Hey, listen. I mean, that's you got to believe. If they don't believe, no one else is going to believe. You know, got to believe.
You think they believe?
No. I don't know. I mean, listen, for a lot of these guys, this is as close as they've ever been, right? I mean, this is
sure.
It for a lot of them. So maybe some of them do. But, you know, the way that this is all gone, they can read the box score. You know, they know how they've been doing. But they also know how the rest of the American League's been doing. And I feel like if I'm on that team, if I'm in that clubhouse, as bad as things have been going, you're not dead yet.
You know, if you were on that team, you'd think you were playing the Knicks, so it'd be
Did I say the Knicks?
Oh, my God, the text line blew up.
I know, but that doesn't mean they all heard the right thing here. Jackson, could you play back the tape? Boston Red Sox in action tonight, kicking off a series with the New York Knicks down in the Bronx. That's definitely the New York Knicks. I don't know why I said that, but I have a theory. It may have been because our good friend Tyler Murray. Did you guys see this? Tyler Murray is going to be doing play-by-play for the Knicks radio, and that was just announced today. So bravo, first of all, to Tyler Murray, a former Woo Sox guy. He did a bunch of games this year with the Red Sox. I did a couple of pregame shows with him. Young guy, very, very good, and is now going to be the new voice, the new radio voice of the New York Knicks. So that may be what I was thinking of when I said that, but no, the Red Sox are, in fact, not playing the New York Knicks. They're playing the New York Yankees starting tonight. New York Knicks, no, not them, an idiot, but it's actually going to be the Yankees, and it's a four-game series. It's do or die. I'm very interested in this series. I think that this is about as dire of a situation as you can possibly be in against the most exciting opponent that you could possibly have. The whole season comes down to this right now. They need to have a good showing against these Yankees if they want to just stay afloat. And that's really what this is all about. They needed that walk-off just to stay afloat yesterday. They didn't gain any ground. They're not any closer to the wild card. They just prevented themselves from getting pushed any further back. And they have to look at each one of these games that way right now, because that's what it is. You can't go five games back now. You can't be behind two other teams before you even get to the wild card team you're behind, which both of those would have happened if they lost last night. Every other team won. So here you are, the Red Sox, with about as much urgency as there could possibly be, and they are heavy underdogs tonight, by the way, your Boston Red Sox in the Bronx against the New York, not Knicks, but the New York Yankees.
So let me ask you a question. If I told you...
Going to say question like that each time?
No.
Question! Well, remember that song? It was Funk Dat. Remember that? The guy would start off each verse and go, question! Why is it that every time I do something, this happens? Then he goes, man, Funk Dat. It was Wiggy. It was
Jackson,
it
I
was
believe.
Sadat, I think, was the guy.
I believe we know what I need to hear when we come back.
A very popular song. A very popular
sure
song.
Sure it was. Back, everybody around here is looking at it.
Back
like,
in the 90s. Whatever.
Them?
You guys didn't listen to the good music back then, obviously.
Anyway, what's the biggest issue or challenge for the Red Sox pitching staff? What's their Achilles heel?
Bullpen. Late inning bullpen.
Not what I was going for. Okay, home runs. I'll tell you the answer.
All right, fine. Late inning home runs. Sure.
Just
they
home
give
runs.
Up a lot of home
they
runs.
They give up a lot of home runs.
Although the starting pitching lately has been very good.
So, well, I mean, they've been still giving up home runs, but not a ton of them.
Mm-hmm.
Enough to keep the score down.
Yes.
What if I told you Aaron Judge has not hit a home run in his last five games? Is that good or bad?
I think that's bad. That means he's due.
that's where I was
it's
going.
100% what I think that means. How many home runs? Does he have like 50 home runs this year? That's not a good thing. When a 50 home run guy comes into a game on a little bit of a drought, that usually means, yeah, he's looking to bust out of that drought, is
okay.
What I think.
Okay. I mean, you could have just said they're going to keep him down, like he's in a bit of a slump.
He doesn't have a home run this month. He hasn't hit a home run in the month of September.
So he's really due.
So he's definitely
or,
due. Yeah, you could say that.
He's in a massive slump.
He's in a slump. He's only hitting 189 this month. So, yeah, Aaron Judge certainly is looking to bust out or whatever this is going on with him. But, yeah, he is not, your kids are too old for this, but my son's a big Paw Patrol fan.
Okay.
Aaron Judge was in, like, a Paw Patrol episode where he had to hit, like, 100 home runs in order to save the dogs or whatever.
Did he do it?
And he did it, and I don't think
spoiler.
I don't think he's hit a real home run since that episode came out.
Oh, that's so, a recent episode?
It's a recent episode, yeah. Oh, yeah. You're not
that's
up on your
cool.
on your Paw Patrol, huh?
I don't think I've ever actually watched it.
Really?
I mean, I know it's big. I've heard kids talk about it. I've seen toys, like the whole thing.
Well, whenever there's a problem.
My kids are in high school.
Adventure Bay. Ryder and his team of pups will come and save the day, so, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's different than the social media video I was watching from the New York Jets where they asked players coming off the practice field, does Lightning McQueen buy life insurance or car insurance?
It's pretty stupid.
They got like 15 players to legitimately
stop and think
debate
about it.
And then you hear other players in the background yelling, you idiot. No, he's a person. And it was well done because the players act other than Aaron Rodgers, mm-hmm. who was the first voice you see. And he just goes, car insurance. And he walks away. Everybody else actually invested some philosophical time and thought into it. And they debated it for a while. It was kind of funny.
I think it's car insurance. Personally,
I would say life insurance.
They're cars.
But he's alive.
It's the life of the car. I mean, that's what you buy when you get car insurance, for the life of the car. So,
yeah, right? But it's only for accidents. What if he just dies?
That's not covered by car insurance?
Well, I don't
like if my car dies, I assume if I have the right insurance.
How do you know it's dead?
Well, it won't start.
See, he'll just stop talking if he's dead. Like,
true.
Doc, he dies, he's dead.
That's true. You know, I hadn't really thought too much about it.
How do you know a car is dead or alive other than if it's a talking
car? Does that
car?
Universe even have insurance? Is that even a concept that they practice?
Plus, if we're going to really dive into this, because I loved Cars 1.
I mean, we're already in it. So,
yeah. I loved Cars. You brought up Paw Patrol. I could talk Cars for a second.
True.
I loved Cars 1. That was in the timeline of my kids.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts out as a whack job, right? He gets arrested, gets pulled over, he's in jail, he's got to fix the road, the whole thing.
He's so, like Tyreek Hill out there.
Seems like the type of guy that wouldn't have any insurance at all. He'd be winging it. He wouldn't mm-hmm. have car insurance, life insurance. He's just living, flying by the seat
doing
of his
what he's
pants.
Doing.
When they had an accident, would they go to the hospital or the auto body shop? Ooh. I think that's...
Well, the auto body shop is a hospital,
so it's the
or
same
vice
thing.
Versa. No, because there is an auto body shop in it where he gets like the new paint job and everything when he's feeling better about himself at the end. And I don't know, there are ambulances. I know there's ambulances because they come on when there's like an accident.
But they're also people/cars.
Well,
ambulances lightning. Can talk.
So they go to the hospital, you're right, because the ambulance comes on the track when there's a crash. So yeah.
Okay. So I'd say health insurance.
Text line, by the way, saying, Arcand, you're wrong. You're thinking of Beavis, that question song. No, texter. I'm thinking of Sagat. I forget.
Sagat, yes. And
Sagat.
They did review
it. And Beavis
it.
And Butthead did a segment where they watched that video and made fun of it.
You're both
but
right.
That is a real song. It's not Beavis' song. Beavis and Butthead didn't write the song. It's a Sagat song. And it was very popular in the 90s when I used to listen to Jammin' 94.5.
You keep saying very popular. How come none of us have heard it?
I don't know. You weren't listening to the cool music back then, I guess. Beavis and Butthead played it, so you know it was at least that cool. At any rate, I knew that texter. Let's see. Lightning McQueen, car insurance is life insurance. He just needs comprehensive coverage. That makes sense. A doctor or a mechanic would tell you that your car is dead. Car insurance does not cover if your car dies. It doesn't cover repairs either. All right. Well,
but
fine.
A car is never actually dead in real life. They can fix anything. They can put a new engine in. They can put a new transmission in. They can put a new anything. Unless it is squished, crushed, and gone. If it's actually a structure still, the car is never dead.
Yeah, I mean, I guess.
But Doc was dead.
Yeah, he was.
Because he was old.
Mm-hmm.
He'd had his run.
What did the Jets, what was their final consensus?
There was no consensus.
It was a split room.
It was pure idiocy.
It was a hung
for
jury.
Like a minute and a half on social media, it was pure idiocy.
Very good. All right, well, Red Sox and the New York Yankees tonight. You got Cooper Criswell going.
Feel good about that?
No.
Why?
I don't know.
He's Mr. Perfect Game.
That was great. I mean, I certainly enjoyed that. I don't know. I feel like it's not often you see Criswell go out there and give you the whole bunch of good starts right in a row. But maybe that'll change. Maybe this will be another example of that. His last start against the White Sox was good, not great. They ended up winning that game, and he went 5 innings, allowed 2 runs on 6 hits, which is fine. I mean, it was a game that they won. So that's certainly good. And everyone still sort of remembers that Detroit perfect game that he was lifted from. Prior to that, he had some good starts in a row, but his month of August in general, he had an ERA in the sixes, and I don't know. I mean, it's Cooper Criswell. Like, he wasn't supposed to be anything this year, and he's out of necessity from Garrett Whitlock going down with the injury and Paxton retiring and all that other stuff. This is the lot in life that you got. And I'd love to see him go out there and be great today. I mean, honestly, if Criswell can go out there and give you a good start, you got the rest of your guys coming in these other games here. It's just, you know,
you have to go
in
at least
a must-win game, Cooper Criswell. I don't feel great about it.
And it's a must-win series, and it has to be. You have to win 3 games in this series, right?
Yes.
You absolutely can't split.
I mean, to win the series.
But I mean, you, for us to take anything seriously moving forward, and I don't even know what's going to go on with everybody else. I'm just saying, if ideally you got a sweep. What did we say earlier, 14-2?
14-2 would be great. You got 16 games left. What realistically, what's the most amount of losses? We both like four or five.
I think anything beyond four, you're toast.
Yeah.
I think, well,
you lose five games down the stretch here. I mean,
yeah.
It depends what these other teams do, obviously. But if you want to make it so you're controlling your own destiny somewhat, then yeah, you have to get about as hot as you've been all year.
Wait a minute.
What?
You can go to this game tonight for $5?
Really?
That's what it says.
To a game.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
To a game at Yankee Stadium?
I don't know. You know how you go to like the schedule page on ESPN.com and it gives you like the pitchers, the network, everything, and then it gives you tickets as low as, and it's as low as $5.
Oh, yeah. Look at this. Grandstand outfield, $408, $4 each. $4. Jeez, this is like rock. This is like sitting in the rock pile.
See, we were just making fun of like there'll be no $2 tickets in this game. Well, $4. You can get into a big game.
Let's go. Afternoon show road trip.
I'm down. I love going to Yankee Stadium. I've been to Yankee Stadium, the old and new one, a few times, and each time I've always had a pretty good time there for one reason or another. There was one time I felt very unsafe at Yankee Stadium, and that was a game where Page was 2003, and Pedro came out. He drilled Soriano and he drilled Jeter. First two hitters for the Yankees in the game, put them both in the hospital, and for the rest of the game, I felt very unsafe.
For yourself?
For myself, yeah. I was wearing like a Manny shirt or whatever. I was there with my friends who were Yankee fans, and I swear to you, the first two batters, not of the game, because it was the Yankees were up second, but when we got there, he hit Jeter right on the hand, and he hit Soriano on the hand. They both left the game, and they both had to go to the hospital. This was in 2003. I don't remember when
it was.
You almost
got your ass kicked.
But I thought, I mean, people were throwing popcorn at me and stuff, and I just thought, if I get up and go anywhere, someone's going to step to me. You know, like I needed accompaniment. I needed people around me, like a little entourage of security to get around. But that's just, you know, that was at old Yankee Stadium.
Did you say the game was on Fox tonight?
I believe so.
Okay. I never know with you because you had the Knicks. There might be a TNT Thursday night.
Yeah, it says
game.
Fox.
No, I'm just no. It is
7:15 Fox. Yeah.
Do they always have Thursday night?
I thought they only had Saturday night games.
Me too. That's why I was confused.
Or Saturday day games. I didn't know they ever did Thursday night. But hey, you know what? Red Sox Yankees. It's the rivalry, and it matters, and it really matters for the Red Sox. Clearly not to the Yankees. You can get $4 tickets, but for the Red Sox, this is very important. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Here's Brian to tell you what's trending. We'll continue with your phone calls and Red Sox thoughts next.
Your home of the Sox. Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now brought to you by Timeout Market. The Boston Red Sox earned a series win over the Baltimore Orioles last night with a win in extra innings. Tyler O'Neill, he walked it off for the Sox with a 3-run home run to give Boston a 5-3 victory. And despite the win, the Sox still remain 4 games out at the third and final wild card spot in the AL. Tonight, the Red Sox head to the Bronx to take on the Yankees in a 4-game series, and we will have the call for the game for you right here on the Shaw's and Star Market, WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's, perfecting the art of fresh. First pitch of the game tonight is at 7:15. Cooper Criswell, he'll be on the bump for the Sox. Nestor Cortez will take the hill for the Yankees. Our coverage of the game starts at 6:15 with the MassMutual Red Sox pregame show with Joe Weil. Patriots are back at practice today ahead of their Week 2 matchup against the Seattle Seahawks. Patriots lineman Sidy Sow, who missed Sunday's win over the Bengals, did not participate today. NFL Week 2 kicks off tonight with a battle in the AFC East. It's Josh Allen, the Buffalo Bills, head down to Miami to take on Tyreek Hill and the Dolphins. You can listen to the game on WEEI AM 850. Westwood One's coverage of that game will begin at 7:30. I'm Brian Frisoco, and that's what's trending on WEEI and on WEEI.com.
It reminded me of this.
It sounds like somebody doing an impersonation of Wiggy. Not necessarily real Wiggy, but like over-dramatizing the Wiggy.
Yeah, sort of. By the way, that guy Sagat, he had this song and then he disappeared. And I don't even know if he has a Wikipedia page. Like this guy fell off the face of the earth after this song. And
he
this
was
song,
so embarrassed, he disappeared.
I was like 10 or 11, I think. I remember we'd go to basketball practice and the song coming on the radio, and we listened to the whole thing because it was just so funny. It was a funny, weird song.
1994.
All right, yeah, 12 years. I was 12 back then. And this song was omnipresent. You couldn't get away from it.
That is awful.
Man, funk that.
It is omni-awful.
I know. Well,
let's be clear to everybody listening, is saying funk that.
Funk that, yes. Definitely funk that.
Especially those of you listening at the FCC.
Right, yes, of course.
God, Arkan, you're right. He doesn't have a Wikipedia page.
He doesn't even have a Wikipedia page.
He didn't have a song. He had that crap.
I don't know.
He doesn't deserve a Wikipedia page.
No one knows this guy's government name. Is he still alive? Like, I have no idea.
Maybe
and
he
that
never
was a
existed.
Very popular song. Maybe not. It was like early 90s AI.
Yes.
That song.
It's terrible.
It does kind of sound like a song that was made by AI.
Well, he did record one record, Mr. Fat, spelled P-H-A-T, under the alias Blakesum?
Okay, I don't know that, but all right.
What's his name?
You find a government name for this guy, I'll be impressed. Sagat, S-A-G-A-T, Sagat. Was also the
Is
name
like
of a guy
French
in Street Fighter 2, the second to last guy you fight before M. Bison. Was
yeah, Sagat,
too.
Yep.
Yeah. Sagat, Sagat, whatever, I don't know how you say it, but there you go. Anyways, that was Alex Van Pelt.
I get in these tennis matches of pronunciations, salary caps, I'm getting
all sorts of
different
stuff.
Information depending on which direction I look. That was Alex Van Pelt.
Mm-hmm.
And
you were into this quote.
I found it very curious. So he said there were times he wanted to go to certain things that weren't on his call sheet. So you don't know the play? Does that mean you haven't practiced it at all, so you're mm-hmm. not comfortable going to it? I needed a little bit more. I wish I had been at the press conference, although it was the last question, so you might or not have even gotten a follow-up.
Right.
And he said, so he has an expanded play sheet this week. He added, they're on the sheet, we added them for this week. That falls in line with, I think, a lot of people questioning this Patriots offense are like, yeah, but if it doesn't go exactly how you want it and you can't run for 120 from him, from Ramondre Stevenson, and can you do other stuff, I think that's at least an example of, oh, we can do other stuff. We had stuff I wanted to do that wasn't even on there, or in a different situation, things they would have done if they weren't. He mentioned earlier we were leading and it was the fourth quarter and like we were in field goal range, so I wasn't going to do certain things. Like we were kind of ready to salt away the victory. But I found that interesting because that also two-part. It plays into the offense, their belief they can do more, be more.
Right.
Throw the ball, whatever, the receivers, blah, blah, blah.
We're going to watch two offenses tonight that can do that stuff. And I think
yes.
that's going to, like, you know, like, I don't know that it's going to be a big high-scoring game tonight. I think the over-under is like 49 or 48.5 or something like that. It's a high over-under, but you're going to be looking at two good offenses that can score points and can go up and down the field and move the ball through the air. And I'm going to be watching that and not, I don't think, at any point thinking, yeah, the Patriots could do this.
And two offenses you have to play four times total,
right,
between the two opponents. But the other thing is I just keep thinking about, and this is not a shot at Alex Van Pelt, but how many offensive coordinators go into a game and their biggest regret is, oh, I did not have nearly enough on my call sheet, other than a guy that is doing it for the first time in 15 years and is maybe scrambling to actually be ready. So I found that very interesting. I don't mean it to be overly critical, but there's definitely a critical, like, he wasn't ready to go if this game didn't play out the way they wanted it to play out.
Yeah. And listen, I mean, he said, and you heard Mayo say it, on Monday, he's like, listen, if they were stopping the run, if they were stopping us, we had backup plans. We had other things we could have done. We had other things. And Alex Van Pelt's like, no, we didn't actually.
Gerard, did you see my play sheet? And that's the other thing. So Lincoln freaking Riley, you ever watch his games when he's got like a note card and that's like his play sheet? He's got like, but Alex Van Pelt didn't have enough on his play sheet. So again, I may be taking this too literal and there may be a more subjective sense in that we didn't practice it during the week, so I can't call it kind of situation, especially in week one of a new offense of a relatively new team. It's not like, you know, in the old days, McDaniels and Brady and Belichick could probably say, no, let's just run that thing. Edelman, Gronk.
Yeah.
They had all run the system long enough. Whether it was in that game plan that week or not, they could probably call a play and they would all just by, you know, muscle memory, line up, run the play, do the thing.
Right.
But in this situation, he probably can't. But it felt like they were underprepared for that game, which is weird because they dominated the game and they played the game on their terms. And that's a benefit, I guess, moving forward, because my guess is you might have to score more points. You might have to throw the ball a little bit more. That front from Seattle, which is a little beefier, despite you dismissing them early in the week.
I dismissed the secondary.
Oh, you dismissed the whole defense, and I think
they're
decent. Yeah. I think they're decent. Although, I don't know how decent they are. They got lucky that, or they were able to get red zone stops. Otherwise, they lose to the Broncos and a rookie quarterback.
Yeah.
So they
also got a couple safeties. I mean, that's usually a mark of a dominant defense.
Sure. So I just think
2-1 game doesn't happen very often.
The evolution of this Patriots offense, people are going to fixate on the receivers because I know Gerard was like, yeah, they were open. If you put on the tape, they were open, which felt like a little bit of a shot at his quarterback.
Definitely.
But the evolution of this offense isn't just on the receivers. It's Alex Van Pelt and the way he does his job and the way he thinks he has his scheme and his team. And we were talking about it in the break. There's also, I don't really know what Ben McAdoo does. And maybe Ben McAdoo was like, Alex, why don't you keep your play sheet? Let's keep it tighter for the first week, right? He's the senior offensive mind.
Definitely.
Right? Like, he's called
a
boatload of plays.
Sure, yeah.
He's been a head coach. He's called plays in multiple NFL franchises for multiple years.
He revived Eli Manning's career.
Right. So, like, Ben McAdoo, I think, probably has a strong voice in helping Alex Van Pelt prepare. And Alex Van Pelt just said, yeah, I really wish I had more plays on the play sheet.
Yeah, interesting. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. Let's talk to Joe in Melrose, who has a thought on Jacoby Brissett. Hi, Joe.
Yeah, hey, guys. I think, well, Ben McAdoo, I think, is training Drake May. And I think we might see Drake May sooner because, according to PFF, Jalen Polk was winning a lot of battles and he was wide open. And Brissett kept targeting J.K. Osborne. So if he doesn't start targeting Jalen Polk and getting more pass yards and they're leaving yards on the field, I think we could see Drake May sooner.
All right. Thanks for the call. If they do have to go to a more pass-heavy offense, could that speed up the Drake May experience here? I mean,
sure.
Is that something they could? Because we all know that if it keeps going like this and they can run the ball and aren't asking either quarterback to do very much, then it's going to be Brissett's job for the rest of the year. If that keeps on going all season long, which I don't think it will, but if it does, they have no reason to move away from Brissett. Why would you?
Right. But I also wanted to know, and again, I'm not an all-22 crew guy. I'm not a scout. I don't pretend to be one on the radio or on TV. This idea that there were guys open, sure. Were they open on the 14 plays that Brissett was running for his life or the 17 plays where he had a chance to throw? Because half the time he was running for his life or getting hit.
Yeah.
And it's fine if you say, oh, I'm open. That's a very receiver thing to do. Yeah. And I was getting my ass kicked because Lowe missed his block or so-and-so missed his block.
Yeah.
So,
and I'm off running and I'm trying to avoid getting hit on the run.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry I didn't see you.
Sorry I didn't see you on the other side of the field as my third read or whatever it may have been.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think there is opportunity to be a little bit more optimistic about Jalen Polk coming off of that. But yes, I think if they're looking to throw the ball, if they have to throw the ball moving forward, or if that becomes a trend with this offense, I do think that would expedite Drake May getting on the field. There was also the interesting report from CBS. Apparently, Gerard Mayo was sort of detailing the plan. I don't know if you saw this, on how they are developing Drake May. And one of the things is he's getting 30% of the snaps with the first team.
I saw this.
And the second is, when he runs scout team, he is not being told what defense he's running against. Generally, the scout team is running a card. He knows what the defense is running.
Mm-hmm.
He knows what he's doing. He's playing a role. He's an actor. He's helping them get ready. It sounds like they are creating situations for their young quarterback where those are more productive reps than normal scout team reps.
For him, not so much for the defense
right.
that's going against them. Right, I see what you mean. And I think there's something to that, too.
That's good. That's a good idea.
If you know what you have with Jacoby Brissett, then why does he need, you know, the reps can go to the kid that you're developing, which I'm sure Brissett isn't super thrilled with. But, you know, if he's not being asked to throw very much, if they know sort of what they got with him and they're trying to develop a very young kind of raw talent here, then it does make some sense. He said that he's getting not more reps than Brissett.
No,
more than your average backup.
Yes.
Right.
Because your average backup gets very, very few.
Right.
Like, I've always been led to believe over the years it was like, you know, maybe 9-1. If we're running 10 reps in this drill, it might be 9-1. Sounds like maybe they're doing more of a 7-3, which may not sound significant, but over the course of the week, that was 2 extra reps in that drill. And if there's 4 drills, that's 8 extra reps over 3 days is 24 extra reps. Those add up. Those compound themselves for a guy that's trying to develop. And that, because that was one of the concerns, right? A lot of people had, well,
yeah,
he's the backup quarterback. He doesn't get a lot of reps. How are you going to develop him? What's the plan? It sounds like maybe we should have believed them when they said they had a plan.
Yeah, and you know, you look at a team like who they're playing this week at Mirror Image in the Seahawks, the veteran quarterback, journeyman quarterback. The offense is obviously a little bit stronger, but when you think about them and how they leaned on the run so heavily in their week one game against Denver, if Denver had started stopping the run, you feel better about that passing attack than you feel about the Patriots, right?
Sure.
I mean, it's not even the quarterback and the receivers. It's not even close.
Two all-pro receivers, or yeah. Two Pro Bowl caliber receivers, a first-round pick wide receiver from a year ago. Now, the quarterback is who he is. I don't think anybody's really afraid that week after week he's going to throw for 300 yards, but on any given day with those weapons, because DK Metcalf can be, he's one of the most unique receivers in football.
Yeah.
Combination of size, speed, jumping ability, and all that. So, yeah, they have more upside passing game potential based on their weapons. But they might need it because Kenneth Walker hasn't been practicing.
Yeah.
He's been banged up, so they may actually need it.
Yeah, they certainly could. 617-779-7937. Tonight, Buffalo Bills, Miami Dolphins. What are you watching for?
I am watching to see the development or evolution of that Bills offense. I got to watch to see if Dalton Kincaid is triple teamed, like the texter told me earlier when he told me I was a boob for not watching every NFL game and all that. So I'll be watching that. I'll be watching Josh Allen to see just where he is, because there was this theory out of Buffalo. I don't know if you followed this, addition by subtraction, that Stephon Diggs was such a dink and a weight on Josh Allen and sort of...
I mean, he threw to him all the time. He did,
and he was still never happy.
50 targets each week, it seemed like, but yeah.
That he was a weight on his, like, mental state,
mm-hmm.
and that maybe that's a positive if others can develop and maybe kind of have just better chemistry, team chemistry.
Did Josh Allen ever say that?
No.
Because when you have someone that you throw to that much, I think about, like, Brady and Edelman or Brady and Welker or just, you know, a safety valve. You know, this is my guy. I know where he's going to be. I know I can get the ball to him. It takes a bunch of stress off my mind knowing that if I'm looking around here and I don't see anything, I can get it to Diggs and he'll do something with it. Like, that doesn't seem like... Losing that guy doesn't, and losing also the second guy in Gabe Davis, who was your red zone threat, doesn't seem like they would be big reliefs for a quarterback.
Well, not in a physical sense, not in a schematic sense, but maybe in just a mental sense. In like,
but the that's what I'm talking about. In the mental sense.
No, but in a mental sense, in the guy's never happy. I throw to him all the time, and yes, he's good, but guess what? Maybe I don't think he's as good as he once was. Maybe he isn't dominant enough, because his numbers faded.
They did, yeah.
Faded. And yet, I bet you he was still bitching at the same rate. Less production, same bitching, means stress for a quarterback. So that's one thing. Just the Bills' new offense, sans Stephon Diggs, and what they're going to be with Josh Allen at the helm. And then Miami, just Miami's firepower. That's the reality, is you're watching that. Because I think the Patriots' defense has massive challenges with both these teams in very different ways coming up on the schedule. We think this is going to be a defensive first team. How do they match up? You know, I don't know. I don't think they do, probably, with Miami, because that's a really good Miami defense. Offense that's had its way with you.
Tua is 1-6 against the Bills in his career.
And what is he against the Patriots? 6-1.
Probably the opposite.
Something like that.
Has he ever lost to the Patriots? I'm not even sure. But yeah, that's a team that they've struggled with for sure in the past when Josh Allen had different weapons. I mean, I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, no. It's,
not to mention the defense, all the guys they lost in the defense. The Bills had to shed a ton of payroll.
Well, he's in that world that people tell you when the quarterback makes a lot of money, then teams start making tough decisions and the quarterback has to earn the money. Can he earn the money? He earned it in week one, right? He put the team on his shoulders and won the game. He's going to need to continue to do that in some way. Now, I don't think he can do that physically every week, just run the ball every week. He's going to has to learn to trust, build a rapport with whether it's triple-teamed Kincaid or whether it's Shakir, whether it's Keon Coleman, you know, developing as a rookie with whatever the upside he may have. They're going to have to figure out ways for Josh Allen to win through the air, because just running and hurdling people. He got hurt on that play. He's on the injury report this week with a left-hand injury. Now, you're lucky it's a left-hand injury, but that is not a long-term plan for success in the NFL.
No, I would agree with that. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Once again, as we are doing for most of this month, I would say, we'll have a little bonus content for you here as we take you up until the MassMutual pregame show, which is going to start right around 6:10. So we'll have one more segment here, and then we'll talk with Joe Weil, get you ready for baseball here, Red Sox and the Yankees. Not the Knicks, but the Yankees coming your way a little bit later on right here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Quick break. We're right back.
Esiason on the Greg Hill Show.
In your opinion, when would you put Drake May in? Because that's what we all want to see.
You got the Seahawks next at home, the home opener. You got at the Jets and at the 49ers, and then the Dolphins and Texans. I mean, that's who's who in the NFL right there. Somewhere in there, he's going to end up playing. I don't necessarily know that Jacoby is going to make it through all these games.
Miss Boomer Esiason on the Greg Hill Show. Listen to it on demand, anywhere, anytime. Download the Odyssey app and take Boston sports with you everywhere you go. WEEI, New England Sports Original.
Now, we discussed earlier the pros and cons, mostly pros, of this new Take Him to the Hill thing.
T-shirts.
You like it, I like it. T-shirts, I can get on a T-shirt for sure. What's interesting to me about the whole Hill is that the Hill's been there for Belichick, and really it's been there since they redid that whole stadium, right? Or was it even there before? Was it there for Schaefer?
No, Sullivan or whatever? No. It wasn't even here for the early stages of the dynasty. It was the second half of the dynasty somewhere.
Okay. Are we talking about over like that second field where like when you go into the media entrance it's on the left?
Yeah, kind of. It connects the two. There's the upper
and then
practice
the hill's
field,
right
the
there,
lower,
yeah.
And it's at the far end. And it's not the craziest hill in the world.
Right.
It's a relatively minimal incline.
Belichick would use that as like punishment, right? You got to go run hills. They did conditioning, right? Okay.
They did conditioning down there.
They didn't have guys running down there because they wanted to go down there, you know? Like, yeah. Mayo's turning it into a thing, yeah.
Like, the team went after practice to do conditioning. They used to do it under Belichick. Now, I do think they did it a little bit more frequently this summer, but this is one of those things. He didn't really reinvent the wheel. First of all, every football team in America does conditioning, and half the football teams in America have a hill. Like, I mean, I don't want to, like, poke a hole in the take them to the hill thing. For all I know, the Bengals got a hill. Probably not. They practice under, like, a highway overpass, so they might not have a hill. But a lot of teams have hills that they utilize in their conditioning. But I feel like I'm becoming, maybe I've been around Fitzy too long. Has Jerod Mayo become more, I don't know if likable is the right word, digestible, less eye-roll worthy in the last couple weeks? And maybe that's just because they won a game and it feels like they're moving with some positive momentum.
I think that's all it is, yeah.
I feel like I rolled my eyes more during the offseason at some of his phrases and things he says. And now I'm like, well, he tells all the guys all the time that your mind will break before your body. Oh, that's a good football coach. It's a good thing to say, coach. Yeah. Right there. Put that on a poster, coach. Put it on a T-shirt.
It's a new style. I mean, it's definitely a new style. It may not be completely different in terms of how he implements everything and stuff he learned from Bill Belichick, but it's a very new, very different style.
But Hardo-esque.
He's younger and a Hardo, sure.
There's
but he's,
roots.
He's more connected to the players from a ex-player under 40 type of cut. You know what I mean? Like, there's something to be said for that Belichick never really had and never could have because he didn't play. And then, you know, as his lore grew on, it became more, all right, I'm playing for the Bill Belichick. Mayo doesn't have that, and he has to start from a different place. So it makes sense that he would lean on the things that are most advantageous to him.
Right. I just feel like he was painted as, because he's tearing down silos and he's modern and he's boardroom and he's this, right. It's all this HR keywords and corporate culture bunk and modern crap. I don't think he's totally that. He feels to me like the classic thing that I can remember every high school coach, yeah, you want to be the hammer or the nail? When you hit somebody, do you want to be the hammer or the nail? I feel like Jerod Mayo can say that. And that's not a new age bunk phrase. So maybe I'm off the mark here, but I do think he has more classic physical approach to football than was going to be given credit for. Like, everybody thought it was going to be, oh, Camp Mayo, where it's soft and you get to put your feet up and
all
rah-rah,
you know, right. no actual substance to it. It's all just motivational, right. You know, Tony Robbins crap.
And now somehow, right. by hook or by crook, by accident, design, I think it's design, feels like he's put together a team that is trying to be physical, very much on the defensive side. Forget the trina. Mm-hmm. On the physical side, on the defensive side of the ball, they're a physical football team. And conditioned and maybe somewhat tight. Because I think everybody wondered, well, if everybody wants contracts and everybody's worried about their money and redoing their deals, what kind of team are they going to be? 1 week, I know I'm exaggerating and extrapolating from one game, they feel like they're a football team, T-E-A-M team.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a defensive thing. I heard Jones and Keefe talking about this earlier. Are we seeing a pendulum shift back towards some defensive coaches when you have
all around the league?
DeMeco Ryans last year.
Yeah.
You have Jerod Mayo this year facing Mike McDonald. You have Raheem Morris got that job in Atlanta. Is there a little bit of a pendulum shift?
Their defense looked okay in that game, I guess.
Right. And I have always, like, maybe this is me. Am I off the mark saying defensive coaches inherently build teams in a different way? Like, if you're Sean McVay, I feel like everybody assumes Sean McVay hangs out with Matthew Stafford, and that's the core of that team.
Yeah.
Whereas defensively, if you're a defensive coach and building it from a defensive perspective, well, everybody thinks defense is an 11-man game. Right? Everybody has to be on the same page or we're going to get exposed. And, like, I just think defensive coaches might build true teams a little bit more inherently.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think that offensively, it starts with the quarterback. On defense, it doesn't really start. You know, it starts with your best player, whoever that is.
Right.
And if you have a great middle linebacker, it starts with him.
Who's
if you
that?
Have a great edge rusher, it starts with him. On the Patriots, I'd say their best player on the team is probably like Peppers or Duggar, one of those guys. I mean,
I'm not even sure, and maybe that's part of it too. Maybe because they don't have a diva $25 million pass rusher or $30 million corner or something. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's part of it too. Maybe they are. Not that they're a blue-collar team, necessarily.
No, that's a blue-collar team.
But maybe the lack of stars in terms of for the here and now and building a team is actually beneficial to their culture.
Yeah, I could see that.
Look at that. We just found something. Yeah. Well, who says we run out of gas late in the show?
Hey,
well, nobody said that anyway, Andy.
Yeah, except you. But no, I don't. I think there's something to that. And I also think that that's another organic way that teams can come together. You know, it's not, it doesn't have to be all rah-rah and everything, but when you sort of look around the roster and realize, hey, I could be the best player on this defense. Hey, we're all sort of pitching in, and there's not one guy that we're all looking to in terms of being the most productive and making all the tackles or, you know, covering the best player on the other team each week, week in and week out. If it's sort of a competition almost, you know, everybody's sort of trying to be that guy. That's a culture. I mean, that's definitely a culture. It's one that I think a lot of teams would like to have.
I guess my point from the Mayo part of it would be the guy who's now saying your mind will break before your body,
yeah,
I like a lot more than the guy who had a mural painted of himself with a North Star and that crap. Right?
Yeah, I guess.
I feel like there was some palatable
that mural
transition.
took a lot of heat this year.
It should.
Why? It's a mural. Who cares?
It's a mural of him.
It wasn't necessarily him, right? It was like a young person.
I thought it was him.
I haven't seen it.
Supposed
to
be him.
I haven't seen
it. I believe it was described as him.
Okay.
So it's him.
Him as like a child?
No, as a player, I think.
Oh.
I thought it was. I don't want it to be him on any level. I don't care if he's a child. I don't care. I don't want him there.
What about like a painting of him?
No.
He's like a centaur. Like
when he leaves, he can be like a president and they'll do the official portrait or whatever.
Yes,
oh, that's fine. But no. Yep, you're replacing what some people believe, not me, but what some people believe is the greatest coach in the history of the sport.
You don't believe that?
No. I've always said Paul Brown.
Paul Brown, okay.
But if you're going to replace that guy, is the first thing you do put up a mural of yourself? It's a bit ballsy, no?
It is. It definitely is.
Have a little self-awareness?
I guess, but I mean, what? He's supposed to put up Belichick stuff? Like, he wanted to...
Who said a mural of you? Any coach had to be put up?
I'm sure there were pictures of Belichick all over those hallways, I'd imagine. You know, there's probably a lot of that type of stuff.
I don't know. They did a lot of weekly photos down there in the past where Bears would pick, after wins, all the key plays in a game, and then let's put it... It was like a quick turnaround. Sunday night, pick the photos, boom, boom, boom. They got to be printed, hung, framed, put on the walls, all that thing. And
maybe
it was,
Mayo had an artist friend who he owed a favor to.
Well, yeah, there was part of it. No, it was Robin Glazer's, apparently, according to the story.
It was Glazer's friend?
She had like a connection or something, and that's who the mural. I hope the mural's already gone. I'm just going to be honest with you. I feel like I should ask somebody.
If it's still in there. So where is it? It's up where the offices are, right? So
it's not like the football offices.
So the team's not seeing it.
Oh, no, they see it.
They do?
That's what I was...
What are they going up there for?
No. In the football offices. The footballs are down there, not up there. The football offices is the lower level.
Never mind.
Where coaches and meeting rooms, I was told it was in that area.
So they all see it. Well, then, all right. Man, I don't know. I guess. Yeah, find out. Find out about that mural. Either way, if they keep winning games, they can put up a million murals. I don't care.
Then it's worthy. If you win a bunch of games and maybe a Super Bowl, put up a mural of yourself.
No matter what you do, it's okay. 617, setting that one. Well, maybe not no matter what you do, but most things you do, murals and things like that, quirky sort of weird stuff, I don't think anybody's going to have a problem with it. 617-779-7937.